At Pluralsight, we don't just teach skills. We are building the tech workforce who deliver results fast, accelerated by top-tier content. Lead with confidence. Lead with expertise. Visit us at Pluralsight.com to tap in and learn more.
Discovering Journeys, the podcast where individuals from all walks of life come together to share their experiences. I am your host, Sujala, and in each episode, I bring you unique perspectives from those who have embraced change and growth. Whether you're seeking inspiration, fresh insights, or simply curious about different life paths, this podcast will connect you with journeys that resonate and inspire. Please note, the content shared on this platform is solely for educational, informational, and entertainment purposes. The opinions shared by the guests are their own personal views, as it is based on their personal journeys and should not be construed as professional advice. Thank you. Today, I'm so excited to introduce you to a guest who is all about women's health and empowerment. She wears many hats: yoga teacher, body worker, womb therapist, EFT practitioner, menopause to menstruation specialist, studio owner, and a somatic coach. Her passion? Helping women reconnect with their natural rhythms and live in harmony with their inner and outer seasons. As an author of 4 cyclical journals and a menopause empowerment diary, she is on a mission to educate, inspire, and guide women to embrace the transformative power of their cycles, whether it's menstruation, menopause, or the transitions in between. In this episode, we will talk about cyclical living for women, understanding and debunking menstruation myths, and reclaiming menopause as a season of wisdom and strength. If you have ever felt curious about how aligning with your cycle can lead to a more balanced and empowered life, this conversation is for you. Join us as we uncover practical insights and a fresh perspective on honoring our rhythms that makes us uniquely powerful. Let's dive in into this empowering journey together. Hello, Helen. Welcome to my podcast and thank you for being my guest.
Thank you for having me.
We're all about women's health, and of all the topics you can speak about, I'm kind of intuitively driven towards cyclic living and menopause. So to start off, I would like to ask you, what if someone hasn't heard about cyclic living? How can you explain it?
Oh, good question, because I think a lot of people haven't or have heard the phrase and maybe not realize that it's appropriate to them. So how I would describe it is just very much living in tune with your inner landscape as well as your outer landscape. So I see it almost twofold. So the first being, if you have a menstrual cycle, then you can very, very easily follow that cycle. So there is 4 seasons, just like there is of nature. We have the energetic spring, the lovely summer, and then we have the wind down of autumn and sort of the darkening of winter. We have that happen with us. And even if you are on things like contraception, or if you're perimenopausal and there's a little bit of inconsistency with your cycle, you still have sort of that cyclical nature within you. So we've sort of got that happening. And then on the outside, we've obviously also got nature's cycles. So currently, as we speak, very much in autumn from outside of my window, but definitely diving into the depths of winter. So we can sort of take those two worlds and put them together, and we'll find that if we follow and we sort of honor what we do and how we treat ourselves with those two seasons, that we can just have a more sort of energetic, more nourishing life, rather than just trying to work at a certain level all of the time and eventually hitting burnout or illness, chronic fatigue, things like that. Those are the kind of things that come up when we go against our cyclical nature.
So when you have a menstrual cycle, you mean to say in a month we experience all the kind of all four seasons?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So we have, obviously most people know that we'd have a bleed and that we'd have ovulation, and that's pretty much, and really we don't even pay attention to ovulation unless we're trying to have babies. Yeah, we have four seasons. So we have the winter of our bleed. We have the spring where our hormones start to lift and we feel more energized. We have around that ovulation time where we start to feel maybe more confident, maybe a little bit more sort of sexual desire. And then we have that autumn where we start to feel like, you know, we're going in maybe a bit more moody, maybe not as much energy. So it's very easy to see once you start tracking it.
Interesting. You have mentioned that you're a lifelong student of a cyclic living. When did you encounter this for the first time and how it has transformed your life?
So it's funny, I think in hindsight, there's been always been part of me that's been very aware of my ebb and flow and my cycles. And I've always wanted to follow nature. But in my previous life, I worked in a very masculine technology industry, and it was always kind of pushed down because it was like, just keep going. And I, like many women, have suffered from burnout and then sort of chronic health issues. So it was about 4 years ago that I thought, this, you know, enough's enough. I'm not kidding. I don't feel like I'm honoring my energy. It was a very stressful time. Obviously, we had COVID, I'd had a baby, you know, we'd moved house, we'd had a big year. So I sort of started investigating a little bit more about perimenopause, because I'm in my 40s and I was thinking, oh, what's going on here? And then that's where I really found the teachings of cyclical living. So I started with the Red School, which is an organization talks a lot about sort of your bleed, your menstrual cycle and menopause as well. So I started reading a lot from them, did a few courses with a few fabulous teachers around the country. And then, yeah, absolutely changed my life. I'm less ill, I'm less tired. And yeah, I just find that I've been able to zone into my creativity at certain points of the month, because we're more creative at certain points. I've improved my running, so I love running, but the points where I'm like, oh, this is so hard, I've actually improved that, because now I know there are some points that I shouldn't be running. So I very much changed my exercise routine, and even simple things like my diet has changed, bearing in mind where I am in my cycle. And I can't preach enough at how much it's changed me and still continues every day to change me as I go even deeper into it, especially now I am sort of fully perimenopausal.
So did you feel out of sync before this, and now you feel more powerful, energized, or in sync? What is it? How would you describe it?
Yeah, definitely. I think I've always felt a little bit like I'm almost fighting myself. I'm very motivated, very probably competitive with myself, if I'm honest, like many of us are, I think. And with all the jobs I've had, it's always been very high stress and not much room to listen to your own intuition. You know, I'd be going off doing events where it'd maybe be a week long, and you're up at six, you're not in bed till midnight, and then by the end of it, you've got a stinking cold, you feel awful, and you then take 2 weeks to recover. And like, yeah, I've always felt like, is this how I'm supposed to exist? I don't feel like this, right? As I started to get more into cyclical living, I thought, wow, this is how it's supposed to be. Some days I don't want to talk to people, and that's okay. Some days I'm a real social butterfly, and that's okay. Some days we call it the inner critic, so that little voice in your head.
It murmurs.
She's powerful sometimes. She's at it, and I thought, oh my God, you know, I talk so awfully to myself. Is this normal? And knowing that, yes, it is normal, but actually there's power in all of these stages, even in, you know, the darkest days of autumn, we would say, you know, before you'll bleed, and all you want to do is eat and sleep and not really talk to anyone. There's power in that, because you're able to draw yourself in, you're able to ask yourself very deep questions that maybe you've been ignoring before. Lots of insight within your bleed. So when you're on your bleed, you're the most honest and raw that you ever are. So, you know, as we might know, and maybe our partners have realized.
Yeah. They're the first hand receivers.
If you can harness that and maybe not sort of just go blah and shout at everybody and feel rageful, if you can maybe go, oh, there's some real deep truth here. I need to listen to it. What is coming up? And, you know, maybe I am feeling a bit unappreciated. Is that true? Okay, it's true. What can I do about that when I'm feeling stronger and more willing to make action? Rather than, yeah, you know, throwing the plate across the kitchen, we can come into ourselves a little bit more.
Does it also help in creating a well-balanced emotional status quo in us, even during the times of stress, burnout?
Menards Black Friday sale is here. Get everything you need to bring home the holidays. A Nerf Blaster dog toy blasts tennis balls 75 feet. Fun for you and your pup. Just $15.99. Delicious Dubai chocolate is $12.99 a bag. Color-changing squish lamps and Performax drill bit sets are only $4.99 each. Menards has great Black Friday gifts for everyone in your family. Hurry in while supplies last. Good through November 30th. See Menards.com. For details.
Out anxiety, does it help?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I you know, I've always described myself as a very emotional person. You know, I feel everything, and sometimes feel high, sometimes feel low. And actually, I think most women feel like that, and maybe get told, you know, we're very emotional. And maybe we overreact sometimes, and, you know, we're very much gaslit to these emotions. And actually realizing that's not a bad thing. And yeah, we do feel all of these emotions, and there's reasons behind it. And being able to go, okay, well, today, yeah, I am feeling quite sensitive, and that's okay, because, you know, my hormones are doing X, Y, and Z, my body is doing this. And being able to give yourself a bit of grace and not talk to yourself in that awful voice, and you, oh, I shouldn't be this sensitive, I shouldn't feel like this. Absolutely you should, because that's what your body's doing. And if you can just be okay with that, it makes those points of, you know, the dark moods a little bit easier to move through, and knowing that it's not permanent, it is temporary, and being able to just honor yourself. And sometimes we're going to have to be, you know, out in the world when we're feeling awful, but knowing that, okay, well, when I've done this, do you know what? I'm going to go and treat myself to an hour on my own, and I'm going to have a bath, or I'm just going to go for a walk.
What are the common symptoms a woman faces physically or emotionally if they are out of sync?
Well, I think experiencing burnout is probably the big one. But I think other symptoms are things like, you know, fluctuations in our weight that are quite big. We're not honouring our appetite. We're maybe not eating the right foods when we need to be. So just before our bleed, we are insulin resistant, for instance. So we need more food. And actually, if you're trying to diet and fast at that point, you're not being good to your body. And when you do eventually eat, it's going to go, oh, I need the food and I'm going to keep it all. And so that's where we start to see weight gain, when actually if we ate with our cycle and said, okay, well, I need a bit more food now because I am in my last stage of my cycle, then our body would be on a much even scale and we would feel better. And then there are times that we don't need as much food. And again, listening to that and going, okay, well, I don't need as much food, but I'm going to make sure I'm high on my protein. I'm going to listen to myself. And then that helps stabilize our weight as well as our insulin levels. So that's, you know, I think that's a very common one. And then also, like we've mentioned, the inner critic. I think she's a big, big symptom if you're out of sync, because really be sort of limited to maybe 1 week of the cycle. But if you're hearing her all the time, maybe we're not living quite in sync like we should be.
What role does sleep have an effect on the cyclic living?
Oh, sleep. I could talk about sleep for hours. Sleep is huge. So just like the food, there are points in our cycle where we need to sleep more. And again, I think this is something maybe we're hard on ourselves about. So in that week running up to your bleed and then the bleed itself, we're going to need more sleep. And it's interesting that sleep studies have never really been done on women.
Wow. Another bias.
I mean, it wasn't until I think about 30 years ago that women were included in any medical studies. But sleep studies have always been predominantly men. So they've said, you know, that 7 to 8 hours a day is perfect. Actually, for women, that's not enough. Sometimes we should be going up to the 10 hours when we're, you know, on our bleed, when we're running up to it, because we physically do not have the motivation in our body, the hormone levels, you know, our adrenal system is not able to function properly with 7 hours sleep. So again, if we can get that good sleep level, you know, autumn, winter time, more sleep, spring, summer, a little bit less sleep, then we're going to see a huge difference in, again, our mood, our weight, our just overall well-being.
What about the women who work in high-stress job or in the night shifts or have very hectic schedules because of their life or profession? How can they kind of connect with themselves?
Yeah, and it is really hard. And, you know, I understand that, especially these days, hours of stress is higher. So there can be just really simple things like making sure that in the morning, as you're getting ready, don't go on social media. Don't spike your cortisol levels and your adrenal system too early. And if you're going to work a 12-hour day, let's not start that before we need to, because your body doesn't know the difference between reading terrible things on social media to running away from a tiger. It doesn't know the difference in the stress levels. It just knows it's stressed. So perhaps can we get up, have a drink, have a shower, do our morning routine, and have at least an hour before we actually switch on that phone and engage with all of that information that is out there. Interestingly, I've had a client recently who has done this, and she has seen massive improvements in her mood, in her pain levels when she's actually on bleed, in her sleep. It's just really incredible. So that's, you know, simple things like that. And also, you know, just go outside for 5 minutes, have a little walk if you can, or just stand and get that lovely vitamin D and get the blue light that you should be getting in the middle of the day. And then again, at the end of the day, can we have an hour before we go to bed without the phones, without the screens? And I mean, that is a work in progress for me, I have to say.
Oh, yeah. Sometimes you reason it out. I have had a pretty hectic day today, so let me watch something funny and it will kind of make me feel good. So it is kind, you know what you're doing, but you will come up with a logical reasoning to yourself.
Yeah.
And then it starts.
100%. And there's so many reasons. Just understanding that, you know, the blue light on your phone, on your TV, it's not going to relax you as much as we think it is. It's really not. It's going to spike your cortisol. So again, your body's not ready to sleep. It's, you know, going, and if you're waking up at say 2-3 in the morning and your mind's going, maybe we're having a bit of problem with cortisol. So if we can just do those little simple sort of blackouts of social media and TV.
My honest feeling is, it's very simple when you say do not watch, but it's an everyday struggle.
Yes.
Oh, you have to fight it out every day with your mind.
Every single, yeah, it's something that does not come easily. And like, especially when we're on the go all day and we just think, oh, I'm just going to watch this. It'd be funny. Yeah. And I'm going to, and to a point, it is going to make you feel good. And you can do that, but also maybe have that hour afterwards. and just fill out. So it's kind of not a, it's not an if or but, you know, we don't have to choose between the two. It's knowing that actually we could maybe have half an hour telly and try and have that hour before. But it's a decision you have to make every day.
If we are getting our menstrual cycles regularly and we are doing, you know, the bare minimum basic physical needs, how can we enrich ourselves, or how can we create a balanced life?
I think it's all, I always preach 1% changes, always 1% changes, and all of those little 1% changes will add up. So if we can, you know, get an app and track your cycle, that's your little 1%. Now you're suddenly aware of when you're a bit more energized and a bit more low. So that's your first 1%. And then add on another 1%. Do the morning without the phone. Then when you're ready, do the evening without the phone if you can. You know, do the, oh, do you know what? I'm going to start the day with a big glass of water. Do that 1% chance. And I think where we all go wrong, and I'm very guilty of this as well, is trying to make sweeping statements that we're going to change our lives tomorrow. We're going to do exercise, we're going to do the meditation, we're going to do the journaling, we're going to do it all. And actually, we're not. And I go to bed every night thinking, yeah, tomorrow. And then the next day it's, we have that 1,000 questions off the children, or we've got the job with the stress, or the school run's been a nightmare, and we're just, oh, everywhere. Just always bringing it back to, okay, well, what's the 1% I could do today that's going to make me feel better? And I think educating ourselves on what that is. So say that 1% might be watching telly at the end of the day, but actually, is it? Let's question that a little bit. Could that 1% be, you know what, for lunchtime, I'm just going to go and sit on my own with my sandwich and have half an hour with nobody talking to me and no phone, and I'm just going to eat my food and really, really enjoy it. Is that all you can achieve today? That's going to make you feel better. This is just, yeah, a lifelong honouring of ourselves and being our own best friend. You know, you would turn around to your best friend and say, have a glass of water, you know, just get off your phone for a minute and just chill, or just take a breath. So just learning to just turn that back around and go, I'm my own best friend. I'm going to take my own advice.
Yeah, truly. Menopause is often viewed so negatively, and it's not discussed. Let us be honest with that. It's not discussed enough. Why is it so?
Oh, I mean, this could be a podcast on its own. I think, I mean, like I said, women's health has never been high on the agenda, or hasn't been for hundreds and hundreds of years. There's been lots of taboos around women's health, I mean, particularly around the bleed, and then massively around menopause. I mean, you only have to look at even just old films and TV programs to realize sort of the jokes that were around.
Yeah, it is like, I have only heard references like jokes. Only two or three words is described.
Yes.
Mood swings, irritable. Oh, she's in that phase.
Yeah. Hot flush. Oh, just give her a minute. And women being hysterical. It's been hundreds and hundreds of years of pushing women's health down, because if we're healthy, then we're going to fight a little bit more for our rights. I think that is massively changing now, and women are realising that, well, hang on a minute, just because I bleed once a month doesn't make me any less worthy. And yeah, menopause is can be a tricky situation, but actually it's a part of life for over half the population. So we're now realising that it's not something to be ashamed of. Unfortunately, there's always going to be the jokes around it. There's always going to be those that don't want to talk about it. There's still a huge amount of education to do within medicine, you know, as well as society as a whole.
If you have to.
Menards Black Friday sale is here. Get everything you need to bring home the holidays. A Nerf Blaster dog toy blasts tennis balls 75 feet. Fun for you and your pup. Just $15.99. Delicious Dubai chocolate is $12.99 a bag. Color changing squish lamps and Performax drill bit sets are only $4.99 each. Menards has great Black Friday gifts for everyone in your family. Hurry in while supplies last. Good through November 30th. See Menards.com for details.
Warm season's greetings to you all. correct it and reiterate it. What is menopause and what are the different stages a woman goes through?
So put very, very simply, how it's actually medically defined, menopause is the one day after you've not had a bleed for 12 months. So technically speaking, you're only in menopause for a day.
See?
Now, we absolutely know that that is not the case now. And we've almost come up with this new phrase, perimenopause. So how we would describe it now would be perimenopause is that lead up to menopause. So it's maybe from your mid-40s. We know that actually it happens a lot earlier than that for a lot of us. And it's up until we lose our bleed for 12 months. And then once we've not had a bleed for 12 months, generally speaking, with postmenopausal, that bleed probably won't come back. Having worked with probably hundreds of women now, it's really not that simple. Some women have had 11 months and 20 days and then a bleed has come and you're like, oh God, I've got to start again now.
Oh, really?
And some women have gone to every other month of a bleed for years and they suddenly only have a bleed every 2 months. Some go every 3 months. Some women will experience really, really heavy bleeding and then it will just stop. Some will experience their bleed just getting less and less and less and less and less until suddenly they realize it's just gone. So it really is such a varied experience. And that is what we would call sort of natural menopause. Obviously, you can be put in menopause for reasons such as surgery, you know, cancer, things like that. You can have surgical menopause, which really does, that's a hard stop. You are in menopause straight away. But obviously, again, there's lots of different things that can happen there.
How long does this perimenopause last? I know it differs, but an average...
That is the golden question. Well, there really is no answer. Unfortunately, I'd love to say, oh, it's 10 years and then you're done. Some women start to experience symptoms at 40 and maybe will still be bleeding at 50. Some women will have a very short, what we would call perimenopause, maybe a couple of years, and then again, it will stop. Again, we're lacking on medical studies here. There doesn't seem to be any indication as to how long it's going to be. So, yeah, unfortunately, no answer. There is a little bit of sort of non-scientific evidence to suggest that if you can talk to your mom and your grandmother about their experience, sometimes it seems to lead that it will be similar. Or at least that you might experience it at the same rate, maybe not the same symptoms, but it's not scientific, but definitely from the hundreds of women I've spoken to, there definitely seems to be some similarity, although a lot of us haven't had the luxury of asking our grandparents or our mums.
What are the symptoms physically or emotionally you begin to, I mean, you can consistently say that, okay, I'm hitting a perimenopause phase?
So physically speaking, you may have inconsistencies with your cycle. So they might not have stopped, but you might say maybe you've been a 27-dayer for all your life and suddenly you're in your 30 days or shorter. So definitely you can start and maybe you go 3 months one routine and then it changes to another routine. So that's a good indicator. Body aches, so just the body very randomly aching, so not kind of like, oh, I've done something ache, but hang on a minute, I've done nothing and my body's aching. Particularly around the shoulders, so frozen shoulder I've seen quite a lot in women that are perimenopausal, so shoulders and hips aching a lot. And then I think the big ones for me are the emotional ones, so the anxiety, suddenly a lot more anxious, or just having flows of anxious times more than you've ever have done. And if you've never experienced anxiety before, it can be quite, oh my goodness, what is this? Like, am I going mad? Have I, you know, what is going on? So a lot of women suddenly think, oh, you know, something awful's happening because because I'm so anxious. And actually, it is a sign. So we've got the anxiety, disruptions in sleep. So suddenly, if you've gone from being able to stand up sleeping to being wakeful, you know, 3-4 times a night, that's a big sign. Or just being able to go to sleep. Often people sort of describe getting into bed, dog tired, and then not being able to go to sleep. And then we've got brain fog, which is possibly one of the worst things to experience. Forgetting simple things, not being able to carry on a train of thought, forgetting words. And this, again, a lot of women think they have either early dementia or new brain tumours. I've met women that just thinking, I've got something wrong with my brain because I can't talk anymore. And you know, some of these women are very articulate. You know, I've met solicitors, doctors, that have suddenly not been able to finish a sentence and thinking, what is going on? So the brain fog is a big one.
Wow. Can anyone prepare for this? Even though we don't know what symptoms we will get.
I think 100%. So it's interesting that in different countries and different cultures, menopause symptoms don't seem to be quite as high. And there was a very interesting, although I'd always take any kind of study with a pinch of salt, an interesting look at indigenous people in South America and women there experiencing menopause. And as far as they could tell, they didn't experience symptoms. They simply went into menopause, they stopped bleeding, and that was it, they were done. They didn't have, you know, the brain fog, the rage, the hot flashes, the body aches. And a lot has been discussed around why this might be. One of the big factors seems to be stress. The more stressed we are, the more symptoms we're going to feel. And if we think about even just 50 years ago, how much more stress we're feeling. So we've not only got the stress of possibly bringing up children and working at the same time, we've also got the stress of hearing the news 24 hours a day. We know what's going on in countries that we've never, ever heard of. But now we're really worried because we're hearing all this terrible news and we're taking it on, as we should as human beings. But 50 years ago, we wouldn't have known and we wouldn't have had that extra stress. And I read something very interesting a few months ago about the amount of information we take on now in, I think, was it 1 hour is equivalent to 1 month's information even 50 years ago.
Whoa.
And so, you know, this is news, this is information about our family, our friends, you know, going on Instagram, Facebook. So our brain has never been designed to deal with all of this. So if you think about us as just a beautifully intricate machine that was very delicately designed to do jobs, we've really changed the job that we're doing. So we've just added on all of this stuff and we've slowly filled up. And now there's no room for menopause to happen because we're so stressed and we're so overworked. And so if we can reduce stress, which we know is easier said than done, we can reduce menopause symptoms. And if we can start early, which is why I'm so passionate about talking even to teenagers about menopause, you know, if we can get into our cycle, we know our ebbs and flows, we know our diet should be, we know what our sleep cycle should be. We can enter our 20s and our 30s feeling so powerful and well that when we get to menopause, we're prepared. We know we need to sleep a bit more. We know we need to eat better. We know we need to change our exercise regime. We could have half the symptoms that we experience now.
Wow, that's quite empowering as well to hear, because in a way I thought about you can't do anything because you don't even know what kind of symptom you will be having.
Yeah, definitely. You know, and I think, like we've said, it is easier. We wake up every morning and think we're going to be less stressed. But actually, if we put it in this context and say, do you know what? If I don't reduce my stress and I don't look after myself, I'm not going to be any good to anybody. now or in the future. And I know that if I don't take care of myself, my brain fog gets worse, my body aches get worse, and I'm just not a nice person to be around when I'm aching and I can't remember anything.
It's highly frustrating for us and annoyance for others.
Exactly. And people think you're not listening or you're not paying attention, and you know, your kids don't understand what's going on. So yeah, you've got to put it in that context. Like, this, I'm doing everybody else a favor by looking after myself.
True. It's so needed. Do you think because of the technology and the lifestyle currently what we have, is it that what is causing early menopause?
Yeah, it's real, you know, it is very interesting. And we're seeing that we're experiencing, or girls are experiencing their bleed and puberty earlier as well.
Yes.
So it is interesting. I'd like to understand what is happening. I mean, I do think stress has a big role to play. I do think the changes in our diet over the last 50 years have a huge impact. You know, we know that there are drugs in the meat industry and in the milk industry. And for all the will in the world, we can try and eat organic and clean and fresh, but it's expensive and it is hard to even, you know, get certain products. You know, for instance, we know that estrogen is used in cows, but to get milk that isn't from those cows is very tricky. I live in a big district. We're surrounded by farms, and yet we still can't get raw milk that is not pasteurized and it's not sort of chemically induced. So it's really tricky. But I think we're going to start seeing now the output of what we've been putting into our systems over the past sort of 50 odd years.
I mean, what age is the earliest menopause have you heard of?
The earliest is late 30s. That being a sort of what we would call a natural menopause. I've met women that have had menopause in their 20s. Very unusual, and usually for medical reasons. I've met women that have had it in their early 30s due to hysterectomies and cancer treatments. But generally, the earlier ones that I've met have been in late 30s. And often that's been in hindsight. So it's sort of got into the mid 40s and gone, do you know what, actually, looking back, now I realise that I was getting the brain fog, I was getting the body aches, but you put it down to other things. Sometimes you put it down to having children or having a stressful job. So it's kind of easier to look back than it is to know in the moment that that's what you're experiencing.
Hmm. To some extent, I can understand the stress factor and the food factor for the early menopause. Mm-hmm. But what is it it's causing an early menstruation cycle in the little girls? Because they are young and I don't think they've eaten so much to, you know, actually spoil their health, or, you know, very much to the stress environment.
Yeah, that I honestly don't have the answer to. From what I'm seeing in the studies that are being done, I think we're starting to think that it's something to do with what we've been eating and what we've been putting in the water and in the food. So yeah, it will be, I think we will see this come out more.
Yeah, because it's the latest one that in the last 10 years, which has kind of seen the ages like dipping.
Yeah.
The earliest I have heard is like 9.
So. Yeah. So, I mean, it's heartbreaking because I know lots of 9-year-old girls that at schools that I go to, and I just think, wow, that's a lot to take on at such a little age. You know, they're still children, they're still babies. So I hope we get to the bottom of it, and I hope that we can maybe start making changes.
What are the few myths about menopause you just want to debunk? It's like, okay, this has to get out of the way from everybody's head.
That is a good one. That's a good question. The first one that always comes to mind is that hot flashes do not happen to everybody. In my head, I thought of, before I did all of this study and know all of this, it was, oh, well, you know, menopausal women, they have hot flashes. And actually, that is one of the lesser symptoms. Not everybody gets it. I don't know the percentage exactly, but from my experience, it's probably only been about 25% at most that have experienced hot flashes. So, and I've even heard women say, well, I don't have hot flashes, so I'm not in menopause. I'm like, oh my goodness, Yes, you are. Absolutely. So yeah, myth number one, hot flashes. They do not happen to everybody. So you can be in menopause without hot flashes. Number two, this is probably a good one to know, is that once you're in perimenopause that you can't get pregnant. You absolutely can get pregnant when you are in perimenopause. It happens often because women assume that because their cycles maybe have lessened, or maybe they have stopped bleeding, that they can't get pregnant. You can. So bear that in mind. That's a good myth to debunk. Make sure you've been safe. What else? Maybe not a myth, but maybe an attitude that menopause is all bad and that we should just fear it. It is not all bad. Like we said, there's loads you can do to lessen your symptoms. And actually, it's a change in mindset. If we can look at menopause as being that next step up as women, and how much more powerful we can be when we're not ruled by our cycle as much and we become a little bit level. And you know, menopause has been described in some cultures as the second spring.
What kind of support a woman can expect or is needed during this time?
Oh, that's so much. I think there's some great things out there at the moment. So menopause cafes are popping up everywhere now, which is fantastic. So if you can go off and Google, definitely happening in the UK and a little bit around Europe. So yeah, menopause cafes, they are free. They are run by volunteers and they are women just coming together to sit and to talk and to share, and just so that you know you're not alone. Obviously, a myriad of books out there that you can read. And I'm a huge believer in, you know, more education, more knowledge. Just be careful what we're taking on and take everything with a pinch of salt. Always question everything. Just because famous wrote it doesn't mean it's all true. So try and get as much information and check that info. Don't try and be an expert, but definitely make sure you've got the information you can do. And then there are, you know, women's health practitioners such as myself out there who will be giving advice and talking, offer free resources and groups. Just always check who you're going to make sure that they're qualified to talk about what they're talking about. And, you know, just make sure you're comfortable with them as a person. Friends, I think, you know, share, talk. And the chances are what you're experiencing, someone else will be as well. You know, that's something we can do. We've been told not to talk about it, so let's talk.
We have always been asked to deal with it.
Exactly.
So I'm going to ask you three questions now, as we are towards the end. What message or a piece of advice would you give a woman who feels very disconnected with her body and her surroundings?
My biggest piece of advice would be, spend some time with yourself. So I know, again, not always easy, but even if it's just half an hour, put the phone down, go out if you have to escape a busy household, or if you can shut yourself in a room, spend some time with yourself. Maybe do some journaling or just listen to some music and feel what comes up. Move, dance around the room, or we'll do some yoga or some somatic movement. It's very simple, because you can't know yourself if you're not spending any time with yourself. We're rushing, looking after everybody else. And actually, sometimes if you just sat down with yourself, you'd know instantly what it is you need.
What daily practices can help a woman to combat the physical tiredness?
So, The things that I would suggest for somebody to just feel less tired and less drained is that hour in the morning, making sure you get up and don't look at the phone for that hour. Make sure that you're having food within an hour of waking up, so your body can get moving, get waking up, your digestion can help. A big tip that has really helped me is taking magnesium. I recommend it to every single woman out there. Take magnesium, a good quality one, and chat to somebody, you know, a nutritionist, go into your health food shop, get the best one you can, because magnesium is something that is burnt off with stress. And so, as we talked about, we're all very stressed. Take that magnesium, because that can help sleep. It can help stress and aches in the body as well, so you'll just feel a lot better. I used to get cyclical migraines, and I don't get them. Now I take magnesium. So if you suffer from headaches or just that dullness in the mind, like, oh, I feel, having magnesium can really help. And then just making those little 1% changes every day that are going to be good for you. So, you know, drink more water, get out in the sunlight, put down the phone at lunchtime and just eat your lunch and enjoy it. And, you know, and they can be different every day, dependent on your mood. But as long as you're trying to do lots of little things to help yourself, and not give yourself a hard time.
What self-care practices would you suggest for somebody when they are, you know, really discomfort because of the menstrual cycle, like a low-key form of self-care?
So I'm a huge fan of low-key self-care. I think it's the key to a happy long life. So when you're on your bleeds, you do need to sleep more. So a very simple self-care practice: go to bed earlier if you can. And I know, you know, those with maybe little children or jobs where they're working different shifts, etc. But if you can get as much sleep as possible, you're going to feel better, particularly later on in your cycle, because you've had that chance to just rest. So yeah, sleep as much as you can and stop the exercise. So, and for some of us, that's like, oh my God, no, I can't stop. You can do things like yoga, walking, you know, lovely, soft, slow, not high impact movement. But you, if you think about when you, just before you're bleeding, on your bleed, your womb is the biggest and fullest it's ever going to be. That pressure down on your muscles, on your hips, just on that womb area, just give it a little break. Try to be more mindful and restful in your movement.
Thank you so much, Helen, for sharing your insights on cyclic living and the much needed talk on menopause.
Very, very welcome.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Discovering Journeys. I would love for this podcast to reach as many people as possible. So please remember to subscribe, rate, and leave a positive review. Share this podcast with someone you think who would appreciate this conversation. Check out the show notes for all the links and details. Until next time, keep embracing your journey and discovering new paths.